is 9 a.m. on January 16th. It's a rainy, disgusting day here in Atlanta, but we're going to have fun in the studio. Of course, you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And as always, we have an awesome show lined up for you today, some fun headlines. I think we're just going to make it official and say that the lists are permanent. We're just going to have a list, a top 10, 15, 20 list every show.
Excellent.
Because I almost always have one.
Yep.
And can I just say that this morning when I was perusing the headlines, there were like five different awesome lists for me to choose from. So we've got them like lined up for weeks to come. Meanwhile, joining us in the studio today, two regulars, two return visitors, which I think that's a good thing. It says we're doing something. We're not scaring people off totally. But we have Jason Swank with us today, creator of Goal Vader. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me.
And Gene Hammett, coach with Core Elevation, also back with us today. Hello.
Hi.
So before we get to you guys and all the awesome stuff you have going on in your worlds, we're going to do our rundown of the headlines. Well, Elizabeth, first of all, how are you?
Awesome.
On this rainy day.
Terrific.
Did you have a nice breakfast at the club this morning?
I did.
Okay. You know, they say that things are on the up and up. You know, the economy's starting to go in the right direction, blah, blah, blah. Of course, they've been saying that for a while. But one thing I noticed in the headlines this morning that, I mean, I know there's always a lot of competition for good jobs. But did you know that there's still a lot of competition for flight attendant jobs? Who would have thunk it?
Really?
Yes. Delta flight attendant jobs, in a new headline, was reported that for something like 300 openings, they got 16,500 applications.
Wow.
Yeah. Who
That's
knew?
That's a hot ticket.
I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense because you get free travel. I mean, I think it's a pretty tough job, even though it doesn't seem like I don't think the actual job of serving drinks and going up and down the aisle is that difficult. But I think the scheduling and the getting to the airport.
Demanding.
Correct. And the being in the, you know, in the air all the time and in different cities, it's tough to do. And it actually pays well. So for a comparable job on the ground, you wouldn't make nearly the money. So I guess it makes sense. But it's just it's like you think of that being something that would happen in the 1960s. Like everybody wanted to be a stew, you know, because it was glamorous. But I think we kind of know it's not so glamorous anymore. Right.
Right. But apparently it's still a good job
still
to have
job.
In this economy.
Yeah. Anyway, no comment from the boys over there. All right. You guys don't want to be flight attendants?
Certainly not.
Fair enough. All right, moving on. In the same realm of the economy getting better, a lot of movement, shall we say, in the real estate world in terms of commercial. A couple of things that I saw that were interesting. Number one, the Landmark Claremont Hotel has been sold and will be developed supposedly into something much, shall we say, classier.
I'm sure. It can only go in one direction at this point.
I heard Blondie bought it.
I mean, you know, I suppose anything. She probably has enough money from all the tips.
That's a lot of lap dances.
That is a lot of lap dances. But interestingly enough, the Claremont Lounge is not actually part of what was sold. Even though it's the same property, they are actually two separate things. And the hotel was sold, but the lounge was not. So I don't think it's become clear yet exactly what will become of the famous Claremont Lounge. So, on that note, if you haven't been in a while or you haven't been at all and you want to make sure you get to go in case it might happen to go away, go ahead and make your plans.
There you go.
And then come on the show and tell us all about it. Also, two shopping centers have sold, one in Buckhead and one in Sandy Springs, both kind of bustling good shopping centers. It's kind of interesting to me because I feel like if I owned a shopping center, I would probably sell it when I couldn't get tenants, which is probably not the way you do things. Probably should sell it when it's at its peak, right? So the one in Sandy Springs that just recently sold is the one where the Trader Joe's is, right there on Roswell Road. And that shopping center has been there forever and really has managed to always maintain a fair amount of traffic, I think, because of its location and all of that. And then also the Buckhead Marketplace, which is the one where the
super nice
Whole Foods,
$40 million
for that puppy. So,
St. Regis.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great location.
Really nice.
Yeah. So not a bad investment, but anyway, just thought it was kind of good news that there's movement and people are buying and selling, commercial real estate in Atlanta.
Absolutely. It's always good to see trade and exchange transpiring.
So I hear the same thing on residential as well.
that it's
really
moving.
Bustling.
Yes. Well, I just bought something, so I can say that that's actually true. We were looking for in-town property, and we weren't really sure what we were looking for, but condo, townhouse, something. And I mean, we were looking at things, and they would be gone the next day. Like, the hot properties were moving fast, if they were priced right, you know?
That's absolutely what I hear. I got a friend of mine, Abby, who does real estate, and she talks about, I don't have any listings.
Yeah.
I don't have any listings, which is amazing, because the perception is there's just, you can't sell your house.
Stuff is sitting on the market, yeah. I mean, I think that, like I said, it has to be priced right, because it's not entirely a seller's market at this point, but it's becoming more balanced, I think. It's not all a buyer's market either. Great properties are going. Like, there was a house that came on the market in Midtown on Fifth Street for the right price, and man, that thing was gone in 2 days because we were going to go look at it, and by the time it was gone. So
I feel like there's a huge difference on in town versus ITP.
OTP. Don't disagree with that, and I didn't look outside the perimeter, so I can't speak to that as much. But I can tell you that inside the perimeter, the hot properties were moving fast. So yes, I'm under contract. Yay! very exciting. Anyway,
That's awesome.
I know.
Congratulations.
Well, now I'm like having that. I'm not having buyer's remorse. That's not what's happening. But I am a little like, oh, okay, this is for real now. Okay. Guess I have to like start packing and going through my stuff and like kind of refiguring out, because it's a slightly different location from where I am now. So like figuring out my new neighborhood and all that fun stuff. So.
Woohoo.
Yeah. All right. And speaking of real estate development, the other thing I wanted to talk about is this Turner Field Entertainment District.
Oh, right.
So, you know, there's been a lot of proposals. We've had Invest Atlanta on the show.
And they've outlined some of the thoughts around what they're going to do with this area.
Yeah. And apparently about a year ago, they asked for input on that area and how can they make it better and what do people want and what do people think. And they got architects submitted drawings and, you know, random Joes, anybody I think who wanted to could submit ideas. And so now they're sort of pulling all that together a year later and they're getting ready to start, I think, making some decisions. But it was kind of interesting, some of the things that were proposed. And I think the most obvious one is to try to connect that area as much as possible to the downtown area.
Right.
Because that's the problem with it right now. It's so isolated.
Make it more of a seamless transition into the overall.
Right. And I think, I mean, is it just me? But I think stadium areas of town are always tough because you don't really want to live that close to the stadium because of all the traffic.
Usually they've put the stadium in a place that had cheap land and that wasn't the nicest part of town.
Right. And then they wonder why they can't develop around there. Yeah.
To live around there until you're able to build it up into like a whole stadium community, like a Wrigleyville kind of area where it then becomes cool to live around there.
Right. Right.
But
like certainly
that's
Boston,
hard to do.
You know, Fenway Park is like a couple blocks from cool
stuff. They've done a good job there.
But a lot of cities, it's like you barely are willing to unlock your car door to get out of the car to get to the stadium, you know?
I've been to hundreds of stadiums. And
hundreds?
Oh, absolutely.
Bold statement, Gene.
Well, you know what I used to do.
Yes, I do. So it makes sense.
What did you used to do?
I know. That was like
Elizabeth
a very mysterious.
Elizabeth wasn't on last time. So for 9 years, I ran a tickets and tours company. So I traveled the world for big sporting events.
Yeah.
I started out literally working at, you know, Hawks games and Falcons games and things like that. But I realized that that wasn't where I should be. That wasn't where I wanted to build my business. But I did travel, you know, to Miami. And I mean, I could list, I probably went to 80% of the stadiums. And everything.
So I picked a good topic for you.
Everything that had a Super Bowl, you know, anything that had a Final Four, all of those things. And then, you know, of course, I got to the level of doing World Cup. So I was in Germany for that. And that was an amazing experience.
Awesome.
Yeah. So am I wrong? Is there are a lot of stadiums that are in funky areas? Yeah,
it's absolutely true.
Okay.
I'm always hesitant about getting out of the car and like looking around to see what's going on.
It's true.
And where I'm parking and what I'm leaving visible. And because it's just, that's just the way it is.
I mean, my experience, and I'm sure you can talk to this too, Elizabeth, I mean, I grew up in Philadelphia, and the stadium at the time when I was there a couple, three, four years back or more, you know, it was really sketchy. Like we went right to the stadium, and if you took a wrong turn on your way back, like you did not, and this was prior to GPS and cell phones, like you just kept driving and hope for the best because you did not stop in one of those stores and get out and ask. No, you just kept going. And that even feels true here. So it's not as bad. I think it's even getting better already here. But I remember one time, now this is not a sports location, but I think it was Lakewood that I went to. It's not even called Lakewood anymore. I don't even know what it's called now. But I took a wrong turn trying to get home. And I ended up by some little grocery store with bars on the windows and whatnot. And I was like, yeah, this is not good.
You know, they feel safe when you're around so many people going to a game.
Right.
But if you try going to one of those areas when there's no game.
Right.
And you're like, you only see three or four people.
Eerie.
That's where you're really kind of over hypersensitive to what's going on around you.
Totally. So anyway, all that to say that developing this area, while I think city planners probably in all the cities struggle with this, it's a great idea to try to do it, but I think no matter what, it's going to remain a challenge. So, of course, connecting it to downtown, both I think that they're trying to find a way to connect it to the streetcar somehow. Obviously, the streetcar is not going to go over there, but to find a connection
point.
Is one of the things they're considering. Also, a soccer stadium is another thing that's being talked about. They're also talking about tying in Georgia State's athletics somehow to that area to get the kids, I think, going over there more. They're saying mixed use retail and residential, but like that gets back to like, do you really want to live next to a big old empty stadium when it's not in use? Or do you really want to live next to a big old stadium when it's full? Because both of those are sort of problematic a little bit in my mind. So we'll see what happens, but it'll be interesting to kind of keep an eye on it. And maybe we should have them give you a call, Gene, and see if they can...
I'm out of that world.
Get some stadium advice from... Yeah, but, you know, we all have opinions, don't we? They called me. I'd certainly give them my opinion.
Consultant on the project.
That's right. Hey, you know. All right. And today's list, with no further ado, going to love this one. The 10 most attractive jobs for psychopaths. Thoughts?
Okay.
I hope I don't have this one.
You hope you don't have this job? Anybody want to guess what the number one job is for a psychopath?
I love it.
This is a great list. And by the way, we have the 10 least attractive jobs for psychopaths, too.
A psychopath.
Someone that works in a meat factory?
No, that does not make the list.
Postal worker?
Nope. Does not make the list. I can just pretty much tell you that...
President.
We are all on the list in this room, except for Gene could kind of maybe get out of it and be on the least... Maybe. He could sort of, depending on how he wants to...
So, radio?
CEO, number one. Number one, most attractive job for a psychopath, CEO. Hello, Jason.
I think you sit in that seat. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I could
regular
be crazy.
In that seat.
Number two, now that you know what path we're on here, number two, lawyer. Number three, media, television/radio. Number four, salesperson. I think that could also be all of us. Number five, and this one is terrifying, surgeon. Number six, journalist. Number seven, also very scary, police officer. Number eight, clergy. Number nine, chef. And number 10, civil servant. So basically, you can get poisoned by the chef, operated on by the psychopathic doctor, and then try to sue him with the psychopathic lawyer. Oy, like, this is a scary world. Just saying. All right. Now,
pretty funny.
I know. And I wonder now, of course, I have no statistics around any of this, just the list, which is fun, of course. But I wonder how many CEOs are actually psychopaths. You know,
I worked with a ton of them.
Yeah?
Probably a lot of them.
I mean, I have to say, like, there's also, I did the other day, I was having a conversation with somebody about the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath. And there are a lot of similarities between the two. But I know I worked with a CEO that I'm pretty sure was a sociopath, but might have been a psychopath. So... there you go. I won't mention any names, you know, because he might come after me. The lowest rates of psychopathy, there's also a list I have of 10 jobs that have the lowest rates. Want to guess, anybody? No?
Bus driver.
Bus driver doesn't make either list. That's probably just a stressful job, I think. Because if you're driving kids, it's stressful. And if you're driving, like, people on the MARTA that are bitching at you and whatever, that's also probably stressful. So maybe psychopaths just don't care about that one way or the other. Okay. The lowest rates. Number one, care aide. Number two, nurse. Number three, therapist. I'm glad about the nurse because I feel like if the nurses are not psychopaths, maybe they can kind of keep you away from the crazy doctor, maybe.
Yeah, the shrinks, I would think they would be on the bad list.
No, they're on the good list. Therapist, which is why I was saying, Gene, you could kind of like as a business coach, you could kind of slip into that list maybe. 4 craftsperson, 5 beautician / stylist, 6 charity worker, 7 teacher, 8 creative artist, 9 oddly enough doctor. So surgeons are psychopaths, but doctors are not. I don't know who made these lists. And number 10, accountant. So at least your taxes won't be done by a psychopath. You can feel good about that.
Good list.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I mean, there were some good lists today. There was one that was like the top 25 worst interview questions. There'll be some good lists coming up in the next few weeks. So be sure to tune in to Good Morning Atlanta right here on Business Radio X. All right, enough of my nonsense. You've been very quiet, Elizabeth. What's going on over there? Are you multitasking?
I'm ready to talk to our guests.
Okay, well, let's do that.
All right.
Who do we want to start with? Who's in the hot seat first? No? You don't have an opinion? You don't want to pick?
You're in charge here, Dana.
I know. What is it today?
Let's start with Goalvader.
Okay.
I've been thinking about it a lot lately, so.
So you want to talk about it, too?
Sure.
All right. So Goalvader, and one of the reasons Jason is here to talk about Goalvader in January is because it's all about fitness, and everybody is all about fitness starting January 2. Yep. So tell us what it is for starters.
Yeah. Well, it's a wellness app in order to kind of recondition how you think of food and keep your goals. So there's tons of fitness apps out there that actually track calories
yep.
and track weight loss.
Yep.
But that's not really what this app is actually designed for. It can help with that, but it's all about figuring out what food you react to and you feel better for. So what the app does is it allows you to take photos of everything that you eat and everything that you consume and track your activity. And then later on in the day, you can actually select how you felt, whether it be good, uncomfortable, excited, energetic. And then you get a visualization at the end of the day and going, oh, wow, you know, this Danish did not make me feel good. Or these hot wings made me feel really crappy. Or I ate this salad and I felt really energetic.
Yeah.
And so.
So like your daily food consumption is
exactly.
like a recipe for your good or bad mood.
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
Yep. And it's all around setting a goal. So whether it be, you know, maintaining weight, gaining weight, losing weight, just feeling better. It's all about that. And you can share those photos with your friends that hold you accountable. And then you can select coaches that actually can see your plan of action. So if mine was to lose weight and I want to run every day or not eat after 10, your coach can see that. And then they can comment on it. They can be like, did you really want to eat that extra bagel or that cake or that cheesecake or whatever?
So do you put your exercise in there as well?
Mm-hmm, you do.
Okay. And do you do the same thing? Do you talk about how you feel?
I do.
About that?
Yeah, a couple hours later. So you don't want to do it right after because you're probably like,
out of
so
breath.
Winded.
You're like, that really sucked.
And same thing with food, right? So
yeah.
You don't want to, you know.
That donut was
right.
good.
Yeah, the sugar yeah. high. You don't want the sugar high talking.
Pleasure.
You want the right. actual.
Exactly.
Good emotion.
So is there like a guilty? And so I know it's like some of it is with like icons, right? There's like mm-hmm. sort of little faces that sort yep. of display how you feel.
Yep.
Is there like a guilty looking one? Because that's
is.
Usually how I would feel.
Yeah. They're hot red
right.
and orange.
Caught
so
my hand
they're
in
little
the
smiley
jar,
faces.
All
that,
guilty.
Like one's like a very uncomfortable feeling. So that was one I used quite often over the holidays.
Like ate too much stuffed kind
oh,
of thing. Yeah.
yeah
okay.
Yeah.
And then there's the Jewish guilt one I need. Like oh, he, oh, he really, yep. did I just eat that whole thing? Did I eat that whole box of donuts? Really? I could have had like one bite. Yeah.
Exactly.
So this is cool. How did you come up with this idea
yes.
and then decide to take it to market?
Yeah. So I was always getting migraines and I couldn't track. I kept going to the doctor and the doctor kept always prescribing me medicine and I always thought there was a better way. And so I wanted to start kind of a food journal of what I was eating. And so I was able to track back what I was able, you know, what was triggering my migraines, like processed foods, McDonald's, whatever, all the bad foods. And then I wanted to do something. I always think everyone's visual. So I wanted to give them a visualization of, you know, what they're eating and then take that a step further and share it with their friends. So that's how it came. And I just wanted to kind of do something that could help people feel better. And I think if everyone tried to do one little thing like that, everyone would, you know, be a lot better in what
we'd all be in a better mood.
Yeah.
I have to say, I lost a significant amount of weight in the last 2 years, 2.5 years, somewhere a year and a half ago. I literally looked around and I said, all right, I'm gaining weight. This is not where I want to be. There must be an app for that. And sure enough, I found one and I used it. But I will say that the one downside of it is like, you know, when I try to use it on my phone or whatever, trying to like type in and search for all the specific foods and find the calories, it can be a real pain in the butt. So the idea of taking a picture is a really cool idea because I know exactly what that is. It doesn't, I mean, obviously you're not going to get a calorie track from a photo, but you know, you know darn well that McDonald's burger and fries is not good.
One of the things I like about it, because we were talking about this, is it's not just the one meal. You can go back and look at, this is what my day looked like.
Yeah.
This is what the whole week looked like.
Yeah.
So you can see that 50,000 foot view
of
what your diet is. So if there's not enough green on that picture, you realize you're not eating enough vegetables, right? And the other colors in there, if it's all brown, guess what? You're eating mostly processed food because that's the flours, that's the, you know, the carbs and the and the meats and things like that.
Yeah, it's all about reconditioning. So if you go on a, anybody can lose weight, but not everyone can keep that weight off.
Right.
And so it's all about reconditioning how you look at those certain foods.
Yeah.
And so what I found is as you're taking photos, and I've been doing this, let's see, the app launched 4 weeks ago, but before then I was doing it for 2 months prior. And so I dropped 20 pounds really quick and I've maintained it off just because it was able to recondition how I saw the food. And so when I was starting to take a photo, I was going to eat that donut that someone brought to the office. I was about to take a picture. I'm like, son of a gun, you know, people are going to see this and I'm going to look back at it. And so it starts really making you aware. And then also it helps you out with the portions that I was finding when I was using it myself, right? So let's say you're a snacker on the weekends. You're always going to the pantry. But if you're always taking photos of these little things, you're just like, oh, my gosh.
That was a lot of stuff by the time you're all said and
done.
So
it would make you almost
put
the portions on your plate and then eat that and then you'll be done.
And I do think, you know, I mean, one of the things that I know has happened to me, so I started using this other app we won't mention however long ago, and now, you know, I got past my goal. Actually, I lost way more than I originally intended. Whatever, I'm happy with where I'm at, all good, but now I need to maintain. So I, in theory, am still using the app, but whenever I cheat, I just don't write it down. I just don't use it, you know, like, and then I just pretend that didn't happen, and then the next day when I, or the next week when I'm up 2 pounds, I'm like, darn, I need to, like, but taking a photo is so easy because it's one push of the button. I think that's a really interesting, and I think that the social aspect also, because you, like you said, my friends are going to see this. Like, I told them I was trying to lose weight or maintain or get rid of my migraines or whatever the case may be, and they're going to see that I'm sitting here eating this, and they're going to shame me.
Oh, yeah, they're going to blast you.
Well, because the accountability is really so much of maintaining the discipline. We all know the right things to do, but if you can hide in the kitchen while you cheat on the system, then you're going to pay the price later.
Yeah.
But making that accountability much more kind of painful in public is, it's a good thing because ultimately it is. We're all out there in the public.
Yeah. And it's all about tracking too, right?
Right.
So if you're going up weight and you can't figure out why, now you can go back and go, oh, okay, now I see what I ate. And like you said, you know, I used a couple of those other apps as well. And just typing it out.
Yeah, it's a pain.
And putting in the calories, it doesn't matter. I wanted to know what foods, because everyone acts differently to different foods.
Yeah.
And
That's true. Diet, the right diet is a very personal, ultimate place to get to.
So once you figure out those optimal foods and then optimal thing of for you for exercise, then you can just keep duplicating that over and over.
Yeah.
And you found that kind of secret success for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So what is your, so you, this launched 4 weeks ago. Is this like your main focus right now? Because I know you're kind of like a guy that does all kinds of businesses.
Yeah, I do tons of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love what I do, you know, every day. And, you know, with building certain products for Payscape from, you know, online invoicing systems and gateways and for web developers and stuff like that. So that's exciting. But I always wanted, when I sold my first company, I always said I wanted to do an app that would actually help people. And so at night, this is kind of my hobby to just kind of, you know, interact with people. And it's really cool to see people reach back out to us and say, you know, we're using Golvader to lose 100 pounds. So that's going to make a major difference. So we treat, you know, this app in a couple different ways for success. If people are actually using it, and then, you know, people actually are starting to have success from it. And so that's our main goal on that, is just to help people out and be able to, you know, make them feel better throughout the day. And then, you know, then I have all these other hobbies and other stuff to build. Like I told you on the last show, I always have to be building stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, building stuff, whether it be for Payscape or for Golvader or whoever, you know, it's just, it's a lot of fun to me.
One of the we did a panel a couple of days ago on one of our other shows called Disruptive Business, and we had three video game guys in here, some very successful ones and one sort of up and coming, and they were all talking about how the industry has changed, you know, due to things like the App Store and how difficult it is to get noticed.
Yep.
And so obviously that applies to apps as well. There's so many apps out there. What are you learning about being in that space and how to sort of stand out?
Yeah, well, you just need to deliver a better product than everybody else, and then just reach out to a couple people and then hopefully it spreads. But if you're truly in it for helping people out, I think it will start spreading on its own. Versus, you know, if, you know, there's millions of weight loss apps, but you have to do something very different. Like Gene always says, you know, you have to go the opposite way and stand out. And that's what we're really trying to do. Everyone keeps going, well, you should put a calorie counter on there. I'm like, no, that's not us. That's not what separates us.
Yeah. So you're finding people almost by word of mouth in a way. Mm-hmm. People
Think about how the app is designed. So when you set a goal, you have to create a couple friends.
Yeah.
So then that spreads.
So you say, hey, I'm doing this. Can you come on here and do this with me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's a team thing.
Sorry about that. It connects with your Facebook too.
Mm-hmm.
So
Twitter
when you start sharing these emotions, other people start seeing it and go, well, what's that with?
Yeah.
So there's this like social effect to the marketing.
Yeah.
That's probably had a pretty big impact on the downloads.
Yeah, every week we've been more than quadrupling the amount of downloads and users.
That's exciting.
And so, and you can kind of see it kind of going up looking at the stats, which is really cool because we have thousands of downloads.
So is it a pay app? Is it a free app?
It's Goalvader is free.
Awesome.
So
found it right in the store.
Yep.
Ready to make my free purchase.
And, you know, the interesting thing we're learning now is just how iTunes actually ranks these apps.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out the formula for that. That's always
to get moved up in the rankings.
Yeah. Exactly. So
I had introduced Jason and I are friends, and I had thought about him the other day when I was talking to a health coach. I'm not sure if she says she's a health coach or a trainer, but I know she creates products and things around that. And she's like, this is amazing because I can see what my clients are eating. So she knows that the clients have certain goals and she can work with them on that accountability by being able to see the pictures.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
I was at a New Year's Eve party this year with the trainer from The Biggest Loser.
Okay.
We should get them in on it.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Delvet?
Yeah. He's from here.
Right.
He's like a friend of a friend kind of thing. I didn't actually meet him, but I was standing like three people away from him at midnight. So that counts for something. It's like Kevin Bacon.
Are you following him on Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Delvet. Seems like a nice guy. Just saying.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he'd like to help out in Atlanta, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that off the air. So getting sort of somebody big like that would be great, obviously, to spread the word.
Yeah, we've actually started picking up a lot of kind of people on the Food Network that have TV shows there that are starting to reach out. And then we're also putting, if anyone out there is a nutritionist or a health trainer, we're starting to put them on our website if they're using the app with their clients. So if you guys want to just go to goalvader.com and we'll put you on the app and try to send business to you as long as you guys are trying to help your clients out with visualizations.
So that's cool. It's like a win-win. You know, they get some exposure and you do too. So that's nice.
And I don't want to speak out of school, but didn't you have an NCAA team have interest in this?
Yeah, the Georgia Tech baseball team is starting to use it as well. So
that's a great idea.
So one of the coaches reached out to me and said, you know, we'd love to, you know, figure out, you know, what our players are actually eating.
That is a great idea. And it's funny because one of my best friends, two sons play college baseball, and those boys can eat. Mm-hmm. Those boys can eat. So I'm sure those coaches would like to get a look at that because I'm sure that could be improved, shall we say, for athletic performance.
Yeah. If your diet consists of just pizza, you're probably not going to perform as well as you could on the field.
I mean, let's put it this way. One of the boys, like, his big thing is to go to all of the restaurants where they serve the biggest whatever and eat that, you know, like the Vortex triple coronary bypass. Like, that's what he wants to go eat. So, yeah, those boys can eat.
Yeah, I remember in college our coaches used to take us to the buffets right after the games. And, yeah, we would We just put a hurting on those buffets.
Yeah. And the worst part about that, actually, I mean, from a coaching standpoint, you know, you want your players to be in good shape for one thing. But then also when these guys don't continue to play sports and that's how they've been eating their whole lives, like that is not good. No. So catching that earlier is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Not something they think about when they're 20, you know. Mm-hmm. What else do we need to know about Goldvader before we get over to our coach over here?
No, I just appreciate you guys having me on the show and spreading the word. So, you know, we're just trying to be, you know, help everyone out and, you know, make them eat better and feel better as well.
You know, it's funny. My younger sister is getting married next fall, and she's actually, you know, doesn't really have, she has maybe, she thinks she has 5 or 10 pounds to lose. I mean, really, she looks great. But she got in touch with me and she was sort of like, well, you seem like you did a good job with losing weight, you know. Can you help me, basically? Like, I know what I have to do, but I just need support. So we've been sort of old school, you know, texting back and forth and commenting and whatever. So I need to get her on there and be her sort of coach on
Seems
there.
Like a sort of theme here. We have an accountability theme of the show.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned one of the tools is the accountability factor of Goldvader.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. I mean, all these other apps out there are just, you have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And they're starting to put some of the social components in there.
Yeah.
But people just don't want to see how many calories you ate that day. It's just really
not that exciting.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I have people at the office. Every time we come back for lunch, they're like, what did you eat? And I was like, really? I was like, you care? Oh. And I told them about the idea, and they were like, we'd love it.
Yeah.
They just want to see visuals of what people ate.
Yeah.
It's an amazing idea you got for those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Yeah. One of my friends helped me out with
nice.
That one.
Nice. I wonder who that could be. Yeah. So we do want to get over to Jean and accountability.
Jean,
but
I want to hear about the role that accountability plays with your clients.
Yeah.
That's all you want to hear about?
No, that's it. We don't really. Why are you even here?
You know, accountability, a lot of people associate business coaches as that's the only thing they do. And if that's the only thing they do, it's probably worth the money that you would spend.
I can respect that. I mean, it's the same thing with a trainer. You know, even if just showing up, having a fitness trainer and having to show up somewhere, that's essentially built-in accountability.
It is, but that's not all they do, right?
Correct.
You're not doing it right. What are your goals? They're not telling you, oh, you should lose weight. You're coming to them with your goals.
Yeah.
So as a coach, a lot of people are looking for us to tell them what they should be doing to increase their marketing.
Yeah.
Right. I would, if I was working with Jason, I wouldn't go, so you should try this, 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 and this. Now we might have brainstorming sessions where we would come up with some things where both of us would kind of like, oh, this is what I'm seeing because I interact with a different circle than Jason does. But, the biggest thing is that makes me different as a coach. And I was thinking about that coming in is I really believe that you have to find new actions to get new results. If you do the same old shit, can I cuss?
You can cuss all you want. It's internet radio.
If you do the same old shit over and over,
beep, 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 beep,
you're going to get the same results.
Yeah.
And even me running my business and building my business, I pride myself in facing my fears and finding new things to do. I feared social media for a while. I knew about it. I knew what was going on. And recently I've been trying some new things. And last night I was interacting with Pat Flynn, who's a big blogger, big podcaster, and you know, just shooting the shit on Twitter. And I've never really done that before with someone that was famous or really done it at all.
Yeah.
And this guy's, you know, very popular.
Social media we could do a whole other show on social media because obviously, like, you know, Jason was talking earlier about tweeting this or that and setting up tweets ahead of time and all this kind of stuff. And certainly an app in a lot of ways falls right into that, you know, social media world. But there's a fine line, you know, between too much and
certainly
not enough.
My whole point is I feared it before.
Yeah.
My coach kind of challenged me a little bit and said, you know, how are you using this? I said, not at all. I think you said 6 months ago, how are you using technology to build your business? And I think about that from time to time because I love technology. I love marketing, internet marketing, all those things. And I'm like, not really.
Yeah.
So Jason's not my coach, but he made a question that made me think about how I want to show up.
Yeah.
And I'm building a brand. And I think we all are as individuals, as companies, building a brand. So if you continue to do the same things over and over, that's going to be your brand.
Yeah.
But if you continue to face new challenges and try new things, that can be your brand.
So we kind of backed into our interview with you, starting out with accountability, which is, you know, how we like to do things around here. But let's kind of go back to the beginning with Core Elevation. Not the beginning, but kind of update us from the last time you were here. Where are you now? What's kind of on the horizon for you? What are you, you know, where are you headed?
So I'm not the most experienced coach. I've been doing this for about 3 years. Big change in my life, which we talked about before.
Right.
And it's actually yesterday was 3 years to the date, which I lost everything.
Right.
And from there, I've called that the best worst day of my life.
Yeah.
Because I found a career as a coach that I absolutely love. I absolutely love what I do. I'm working with my clients to help them achieve things, help them see things they couldn't see for themselves. It was slow getting started. I got my training. I got all those things going. But since we come here, I was just emerging in my business, and I'm still emerging. I've got probably 8 clients one-on-one. I'm about to launch a group program because it's going to be centered around, you guys can probably guess this, accountability. Because I've been talking to so many people and interviewing them, small business owners especially, who holds you accountable for the things you want? And the answer, it comes back, oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting because there are certain segments of the working world where that's built in, obviously. If you're an employee of somebody, you're accountable. Your boss wants to know, did you do this task I gave you? You know, the way I asked you to do it in the time frame I asked you to do it. And interestingly enough, I mean, I know I come from a background in book world. I used to own a bookstore. And so I know a lot of authors and writers, and almost all of them belong to writers groups. And they hold each other accountable. They have to have a chapter done by the next time they get together to share with the group.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of an interesting idea because entrepreneurs don't often have that.
And they get so caught up in the day-to-day of their business,
Yeah. Serving
their clients. I mean, no one would fault you as a business owner to focus on serving your clients. But how much time are you taking to build your business, to build your brand?
Yeah.
And the answer is not much. I primarily work with web designers. And Jason, that's the reason we know each other, because Jason was the CEO of Solar Velocity, which he sold.
And hopefully not a psychopath.
Not a psychopath. Well, I don't know. We could tell some stories. But
we're all crazy.
Yeah. We all have our moments.
Jason didn't fall in this pattern because he had built a business, but maybe earlier he did, because I primarily work with smaller agencies, like 2 people to maybe 8 people. And Jason's was much bigger than that. But I'll ask you the question. Most what I see a lot of these small agencies, they work for their clients doing marketing and doing all these things, but they don't do much for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just so focused on getting the next deal and just trying to make money versus kind of build it for the long run. So they try to build it for the short run.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference in that. Like Gene was saying, you know, the biggest thing to a coach is, like we were saying, is kind of that accountability. But you know what they do, and who was your first client? I think could it be me? I think
no, it wasn't my first client.
All right,
but that's a great story if you want to tell the story.
Yeah, but he asked the right questions, right? And so he helped me figure out kind of where I wanted to go.
Yeah,
you know, after I sold Solar Velocity, I was kind of trying to figure out, all right, what's the next thing, right? So I had kind of Goalvader kind of, you know, on the top of my mind. I had kind of the concept, or, you know, I knew I wanted to do something in technology and innovation. He kept asking those questions, and he really helped me out figuring out where I needed to go. And, you know, it's kind of like when I would teach people how to race cars, whatever you focused on is where you would actually go. And so let's say you're running down the straightaway and you're spinning out. The first thing most people do is look at the wall of what they don't want to hit, because they start focusing on it, and that's exactly where you're going to go. And so he helped me start trying to focus. All right, I kept saying innovation. He was like, innovation, innovation. And now I'm the chief innovation officer for Payscape, as well as with Goalvader. So, you know, there's power there of questions and focus.
I think there was about, because I could go back and look at my notes, probably 6 or 8 weeks in between us having a 1-hour conversation. 1 hour.
Yeah.
And I think one of the big questions in there, because I remember you saying, that's the best question ever. He goes, I'm looking for something, but I'm not sure what I'm looking for. I know it's around innovation. And I said, well, what are you doing to bring innovation into your life? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, that's a big question. And it kind of stopped there. And I think we kind of pulled away. And he calls me up about 6 weeks later and goes, guess what? I got a new job. And I'm like, all right. And he goes, what is it? And he goes, I'm the CIO. I'm like, you're not into data and information and services. He's like, oh, no. I'm the chief innovation officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of a little – I'm getting a little chill from that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good story.
But it goes back to he was creating – new actions to get new results. He wasn't sure, so he started focusing on innovation. And I think they reached out to you about a job, and he's like, oh, that's a good idea, but let's shape it this way. How about this? Have you thought of this? So he was challenging them with new actions and new ways of thinking and a new mindset. And all of a sudden, he goes, oh, yeah, and I want my title to be this. Is that about the way it happened?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
And that is true innovation, creating something from the ground up with the purity of an idea, and then focus, and then where does that take you?
Yeah, the biggest thing is just knowing where you want to go, focusing on it, and then measuring yourself along the way.
I think one of the really interesting points that you brought up, Gene, is that entrepreneurs often don't take the time. Like, they're just so heads down, you know, selling the clothing or, you know, building the widget or whatever it is that they don't take the time to, A, take care of themselves, B, figure out what's going to make them work for the long haul and not in the moment. But you know, it's interesting. I was talking to, in fact, Elizabeth and I were talking to another guest last week, I think, on a different show, who said you should figure out how much money you want to make for the year, and then figure out how you can make it in 2/3 of the year so that you can spend the other third of the year on business development, essentially. And I would add to that personal development, you know, and making sure that you're in the right place. But that made so much sense to me, because every time I ran numbers for my own projects, I would run the numbers assuming I was going to work 50 weeks of the year on the actual task, not business development or personal development. And so I'm basically leaving myself no time to keep the business going and have time for a business coach, for example, who's going to set me on the right path, hopefully.
Because we had some discussions a few weeks ago, and they were all around creating something new in your life, right?
Yeah.
And you wanted to break those patterns.
Yeah.
And guess what you did?
Yeah. And that's out of a 1-hour conversation, right? So,
and you didn't even pay me for that.
I know.
that was complimentary, because I do want to get to know my clients before they write a check.
Yeah.
Because I just think in this economy, I think, and it's just the way I want to build my brand, I want to give as much as possible. I really, my actual coach that I work with to build my business will actually caution me, you give too much.
Yeah.
And I've had people not hire me because in a 20-minute conversation, we've addressed a huge concern they had around building their business.
I think that's a really important point too. And, you know, we'll coach you a little bit, because one of the things I'm learning in, you know, all of my various freelance projects is that A, you have to say no sometimes, right? Like sometimes, even though you could do it.
Very important, actually. And I just heard someone the other day say that the things that you say no to are just, or if not more important than what you decide to say yes to. Like, you say no a lot more than you say yes. And being definitive and discerning like that is what actually helps you stay on focus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that we did at Solar was is turn down clients. I mean, we would turn down some clients that were paying us $30,000.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the best thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
Because it allowed us to focus on where we could have the biggest impact and not the distractions.
Right.
You got to be really clear about who you are in your business and building that brand. That's one of the core messages that which I really want to try to get out there for my target audience, which is small digital agencies and freelancers that build websites, because I feel like they take this jack of all trades approach to the business. I'll take the next person who fills out a form on my website or calls. So they're doing a lawyer one day, they switch gears and do a daycare center. All of a sudden they're doing an e-commerce company. How can they really truly serve all those varieties of companies? My answer is, you can't. You can create maybe a pretty website, but are you truly serving them to the highest degree possible?
Right. Can you make good suggestions that really help their business?
And I want to share this with you, too, because I give a message about standing out in a crowd. Jack of all trades is actually translated in many languages to something pretty funny. So one of them is Lithuania says you can't shit in every bush.
That's the jack of all trades, basically.
That's the jack of all
trades.
My
2-year-old could.
In every bush. Most yes. bushes.
You know, I had lots a heckler the other day at a speech I gave, and she said, yeah, I could shit in every bush. And I'm like, really? You could? And she's like, yeah, a little bit in each one. And I'm like, she just said that. And so my response was, that would take a lot of shit.
But actually, I think she just made your point for you, because you're not if you're just doing a little everywhere, you're not doing anything well.
Exactly.
And we've talked about this offline too. Niches make riches. And, you know, it's sort of like you're choosing a niche for your business to focus on, you know, web development groups, and you're basically advising them to do the same thing.
Yeah. And it's probably about 50-60%, because I want to keep the variety in my business to really serve people to do new things.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is around finding those niches. I have clients that are accountants. And so people see accountants that are, they do accounting for everybody. They see them as that one function.
Yeah.
And he comes to me the other day and says, you know, I really want to find that one focus. I really want to serve them better than anyone and be known for that. And I'm like, that makes so much sense. Where'd you get that from? He goes, well, it's in all these industry journals I've been reading. And I know you have a focus as a coach. And so this is what I want to build my business for the long haul.
Yeah. I think sometimes maybe those things happen organically. Maybe you don't really know what your niche should be. But like you said, a client, a web developer, maybe has 3 or 4 different kinds of businesses they work with, and all of a sudden they get a second client in one of those areas, and then suddenly they realize, well, you know what, I could specialize here. This makes sense. I'm good at this. I understand this.
The thing about specializing, I consume a lot of material, and so I was interviewing some other web designers, which is a part of my business. It's called the DNA Master Series. I'm developing a new brand called designnicheacademy.com, and inside that brand we'll have some products and some other services from a coaching standpoint, group, individual, but I want to have an interview series around people that are really doing it well. So a recent interview I did was Brian Castle with Restaurant Engine. He was a web designer, much like you guys were. He struggled. He was working about 16 hours a day or so, just working all the time. Money wasn't an issue, but he decided, let me focus on one idea, one business. And so he picked restaurants. I'm not sure why. We talked about it. He goes, I just picked it. I'd never done a website for a restaurant. But he's created a solution called restaurantengine.com, very focused. He's allowing, created all the tools necessary for these restaurants to get online quicker, cheaper, and better than buying a one-off solution, like $80 a month, $50 to $80 a month versus $3,000 to $5,000. And I know you wouldn't even do a restaurant probably before, because you're like, they're not $30,000 or $40,000, mm-hmm. Jason. So it's pretty interesting how that level of focus, most people resist it, but it can really serve you so well.
Well, because it can be scary. You know, if you choose the wrong, you know, if the logic being, it's like committing to a husband or a wife or a new house, or, you know, like if I pick this one thing, I'm giving up all the other things that are out there in the world that might be better.
I understand the fear, but you have to see it and accept it and move forward. Yeah. New actions for new results. Because once I have done this for my business, I absolutely, more ideas came to me than I gave up.
Yeah.
Because actually the better ideas came to me once I started focusing.
And I also like thinking about commitment. I hate to say this because, you know, when you get married, for example, you guys are married, you know, when you get married, you stand up there and you say, till death do us part, you know, till the bitter end, I'm going to be committed to you. No matter what, you know, like you can get fat and ugly and turn into a raving lunatic.
Not
and
if
I
you
will
use
still,
gold later.
That's right. Not if you, good tie back. But I always sort of look at it the other way. Like, yeah, I'm making a commitment, but you know, life is long. I can change my mind. I can pick something. I can commit to doing, you know, web design and development customers for the foreseeable future. And when I find that I've tapped that market out, I can add another one. Or, you know, it's not like, I think when people get married, especially in their 20s, they're like, oh my God, this is terrifying. But you know, when you're picking businesses and you're looking at ideas later in life, you have a little bit more broader of a perspective. I'm sure when you were in the, you know, ticketing business, you were thinking this was it.
I did, but I realized, cause I got a coach early in that,
yeah.
that, I would be better off not stretching myself so thin. So yeah. being that jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And I hadn't gone down from, I think the first year I was in business, I probably did 200 or 300 events, because of the way my accounting was, I could go actually look through there and say, okay, I did 300 events and there's 365 days.
Yeah. Wow.
Now I did events outside of Atlanta and, you know, concerts, theater. And the first iteration, every year, I would reinvent myself. All right, no more concerts, no more theater.
You were sort of going down
just
to
sports.
A niche. Yeah.
And then it got to the point where I just did big sports.
Yeah.
And at the end, I was probably working 6 or 8 events a year. So I only did the Super Bowl, the Olympics, the World Cup soccer, the Masters golf tournament. And so I did that, and it took more time than I wished it would have.
Yeah.
Because if I'd gotten there quicker, and that's kind of my message, is how do you get there quicker? How do you get to that focus level quicker?
Yeah.
So that you can be a big fish in a little pond. Everyone's heard that saying before, right?
Yeah.
Or you could just be the little fish in an ocean.
Yeah.
Do you think that is where you make your money and make your mark and build your brand?
That's a tough one. Yeah. People have different, I think, different
attitudes.
So since
you can't shrink the ocean, you've got to shrink it down to a pond level, your niche, or
right.
where you want to play in.
Well, I think it all comes down to modeling, right? So you figure out where you want to go, and then you find someone that's already been there. And then you model what they have done. Not, you know, copy, but, you know, you reach out to them. So if you find someone that is like your friend, right? So she looked up to you because you lost weight.
Right.
And she was like, well, how did you do it?
Right.
And so she was trying to model
right.
after that.
Right.
The same thing applies with business or anything else you're trying to do.
Right. Right. I think there's obviously so much, which is why people need a coach and not just a couple minutes with you on the radio. But because there is so much, and everybody's case is different. And,
yeah.
And, you know, for some people, I think probably finding that niche would be key. But I think a lot of people need way more than that, right? A lot of other fears to deal with.
There are a lot of fears. I had a client the other day ask, do you focus on corporations or do you focus on individuals? And the reality is my coaching balances both, but a lot of the issues go back to the individual. So we could talk about your marketing efforts. So who holds you accountable for the marketing that you want to do for your business? And if no one holds you accountable, are you able to do it? And this is a distinction I want to make. I don't think the coach actually holds you accountable. I think you learn accountability for yourself. The coach is what is that sounding board that can check in with you
yeah.
around your own accountability. Because as a coach, I want my client to learn how valuable accountability is, doing the things that they say. So I ask you a question. The commitments that you make to yourself, and compare those to the commitments you make to others. Which one do you hold in higher regard?
Well, the ones that you make to others, obviously, because they're waiting for you to do something. So like when you say that's why people can't stick to diets. Because like, well, I'm in a hurry. I'll just eat the French fries because Joe's waiting for me to deliver that paper and the French fries are closer by. You know, absolutely.
I made a commitment to be here, as an appointment in my schedule.
Yeah.
Right? If I didn't show up, what does that say about me?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that to you.
Right. But you do it to yourself.
But I would do it to myself if a chance.
Yeah.
So I have two coaches right now that I work with. I make commitments to them every week, and we work on different things. I do them whether I feel good about it or not. So I'll give you an example. I had a Sunday night where I was with my family for all day long and saw my mom and I had a great time, and I knew I had a commitment to make that I said I would do Sunday night. And I was tired. It would be really easy to turn on the TV and not do it. But I made a commitment to my coach. So I did it. I thought I would spend 20 minutes. I probably ended up spending close to an hour. And I typed up 3 pages. And I did it. Because that's who I am. I was accountable to myself because I made that commitment. But I wanted to show him that I'm accountable. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah. But having that other person, whether it be, you know, somebody coaching you through Goalvader, whether it be having a coach, yes, it's for yourself. And you set those relationships up for yourself. But having that other person as kind of a backup is...
100%. If I did not make that commitment on a Sunday afternoon after being tired, I wouldn't have done it.
Yep.
I would not have done it. I would have said, oh, I can do that later.
Yep.
And I should have done it maybe earlier in the week. But 100%.
Yeah.
So who holds you accountable?
That's a good
Dana.
Oh, you're asking me specifically? Oh, we're in trouble. Maybe it's going to be you, Gene, my new business coach. We'll see.
I don't know. Maybe I'm not the right one for you.
Oh, that's sad. Are you dumping me already?
No, I just, you know.
Was it my, taking was the it, offer off the table.
I know. Was it my
a
psychopath
sales
list?
Technique.
No, you said you would do something and you didn't. No, I'm just kidding.
Uh-oh. Damn. called out right at the end of the show. You got to love it. Well, before we wrap things up, I want to make sure that everyone is held accountable. So please tell them how they can get in touch with you, Gene.
So I go by Gene the Dancing Machine. I think you left that out.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did I commit to that? Am I being now held accountable?
The company name is Core Elevation, and that's the coaching company. I'm developing another brand called DesignNicheAcademy.com. It is very new. It's really not even up yet, but I think once this gets published, it will be up. And it's all around how I plan to service web designers and small digital agencies and freelancers to help them run their business, grow their business, find their niches, test them, and really developing products and solutions around how do they really want their brand to show up. And so the best way to get me is through one of those. Twitter is at Gene Hammett. And other than that, I'd love your stories about who holds you accountable. Share with me. We'll have a conversation and see where you can find new actions to get new results.
Excellent. So you gave all your contact stuff. I won't repeat it all because there was a lot there. But one more time from you, Jason, goalvader.com.
Yep. It's goal and motivator put together, kind of, right? So it's goal and then kind of like Darth Vader. That's how you spell it. So goalvader.com, goalvader on Twitter, and just type in goalvader on iTunes and you can download the app. It's free. And it's all designed around making you feel better and laying out a goal.
Excellent. And Elizabeth, should we call you in the middle of the night? How do we get in touch with you?
You can reach me anytime at flourishingbusiness.com.
Oh, look at us all giving our contact information. And please do not call me for anything ever. No, kidding. Of course, we'll be back next week, but that's about it for today. Of course, thanks to Jason Swank and Gene Hammett for joining us and to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. Learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. And stay tuned for more great shows here on Business Radio X.